My name is Sri Ram Shankar Narayan, and I'm here to talk about polyhedral analysis.
Yes.
Sri Ram Shankar Narayan. It's not that long. It's not that long.
Okay. How many A's?
too many. More A's than I got in grad school. I'm here to talk about polyhedral analysis of systems code. So let me quickly get polyhedral analysis out of the way. The goal here is to compute linear inequality invariance of programs. In linear inequalities such as 0 less than equal to I less than N or 2I plus J equals K. The applications are primarily checking programs for buffer overflows, for null pointer dereferences, improving range analysis, and analysis of programs for floating point operations. To give you a brief outline of my talk, this talk is not primarily concerned as much about verification or how to do abstract interpretation, as much as it is concerned about how to implement polyhedral operations when you are doing an abstract interpretation scheme on polyhedra. So we have already decided on an abstract interpretation scheme for computing invariance using forward propagation, if you will. And we are more interested in optimizing the post conditions, the join operations, the widening operations, the inclusion tests, and so on and so forth. So I'll give you a brief overview of the polyhedral domain, talk about the different polyhedral domains out there and the approximations, and I shall mainly concentrate on one operation, that is the design of a join operation. I shall also discuss some applications that I have tried out inside NEC Labs. So to begin with, as I mentioned earlier, program analysis aims to compute an invariant at each program location, and this is typically done by an abstract interpretation, though there are other methods which you could think of. So first you design an abstract domain, and when you design an abstract domain, you already design all the domain operations that go along with it. But once you have designed it, what you do is you do a fixed point computation or a propagation algorithm. You initialize the domain with your start conditions and simply propagate the predicates until you reach a fixed point. The use of widening in the polyhedral domain will hasten the fixed point and will actually let you get to a fixed point in a finite amount of time. So abstract domains, without going into too many details again, is basically a lattice of predicates on the program states which you can define using the well-known Galois connections. In this talk, I shall concentrate mainly on numerical abstract domains, domains such as intervals, octagons, and polyhedra, and the details of abstract domains are in many other surveys that are available in the literature. So the domain operations, which I have been alluding to until now, are basically those of post-condition, join operations, intersections, and some other domain operations that will appear in my next slide. But the basic idea is each domain operation is required to handle some aspect of the program's behavior. For example, a post-condition, you start with a predicate S1 on an edge, and there is an assignment, Y equals E, and you find out what holds after you take the assignment. So S is basically written as the post-condition of S1 on B, which is a domain operation. A join is designed to handle join points in the program's flowchart. So you have S1, S2, S3 are all incoming predicates, which are predicates on the incoming edges, and you would like to compute a single predicate on the outgoing edge that over-approximates the effect of S1, S2, S3. So it's essentially S1 or S2 or S3. It's a union that's allowed inside the domain. A meet operation is essentially an intersection. So if you have a branch point based on a condition C, an incoming predicate S1, you would like to compute S1 and C, which is the predicate on the yes branch of the condition. Excuse me. So there are other domain operations which are widening, which is needed to enforce convergence. Inclusion test, which is actually needed to detect the convergence. Simplification, which is needed to keep the representation simple. Projection, which is needed in interprocedural analysis to transfer between the callee to the caller. You get rid of the local variables that are out of scope. So with these domain operations in mind, let me skip over to the polyhedral abstract domain. The polyhedral abstract domain, as I mentioned earlier, is the domain of convex polyhedra. A convex polyhedron is a conjunction of linear equalities or inequalities, and the variables in these polyhedra are assumed to be real numbers. This is a safe over-approximation for integer variables, as was discussed in today's morning's discussion. There are many implementations of convex polyhedra, such as the Parma polyhedral library, the new Polka library, and I run out of space to describe the other libraries. The basic issue behind a convex polyhedron is one of representation. So the simplest representation that you can think of for a convex polyhedron is the constraint representation. So as I mentioned, a convex polyhedron is a conjunction of linear inequalities. So you can simply represent it just like that, a conjunction of linear inequalities. On the other hand, there is another representation called the generator representation. You can write a convex polyhedron as the convex hull of a set of vertices, and it's technically called a Minkowski sum of a set of vertices, rays, and lines. So the key point that I wish to make here is that each representation can be exponentially larger than the other representation. If you had 100 constraints, you could have as many as 2 to the 100 generators. On the other hand, if you had 200 generators, you could have as many as 2 to the 100 constraints. So each representation is exponentially, could be exponentially larger, and in many cases is exponentially larger. The simplest example I can think of is think of an n-dimensional hypercube. For example, the two-dimensional hypercube is a square. It has four constraints, four sides, and it has four vertices. On the other hand, the three-dimensional hypercube has six constraints, and it has eight vertices. So an n-dimensional hypercube has two n constraints and two to the n vertices. So it's pretty simple to realize that even simple hypercube-like constraints can have exponentially more generators than vertices. On the other hand, you can dualize and think of systems which have exponentially more vertices than generators. So it's both ways are exponentially larger than the other one. And finally, the other point is that the conversion between representations is hard. So we know that if one representation is exponentially larger than the other representation, then the conversion needs to take exponential space. But unfortunately, the conversion is not output sensitive. Even in cases where each representation is relatively polynomial in the other representation, the conversion itself could produce exponentially many generators intermediately. So it's a hard problem to convert from one representation to another. But then, the reason I'm talking about this double description is that if you have these two representations, then your domain operations become easy. To illustrate this, the join in a convex polyhedral domain, the approximation to the union, is the convex hull. And the convex hull is computed typically by combining the generators of the two polyhedra and using a set union and recomputing the constraints. The post condition, which is the transfer function across a linear assignment, consists of applying the assignment on each of the generators. So you take each vertex, apply the assignment on the vertex, you get a vertex of the new polyhedron. And so if you do it generator by generator, you get the generator representation of the image, which is essentially how you do post conditions. Inclusion checks take each constraint of the outer polyhedron and take each vertex of the inner polyhedron and check the vertices against the constraints of the outer polyhedron for satisfaction. So in this case, take each green dot and see if it's really inside P2, for which you need both the constraint and the generator representation. So the key point is join is a union of generators, whereas intersection is a union of constraints. Post condition depends on the generators. Inclusion checks need both the generators and the constraints. So you need both the representations really to carry out the abstract interpretation. If you need to carry it out exactly on the polyhedral domain as it is in the literature, you currently need both the representations. And this is hard in practice because converting from one representation to another is exponential space. So efficient polyhedral analysis requires us to avoid this double description and operate solely on one description only. And this is typically done by reducing the complexity of domain operations. So we don't have to compute an exact convex hull. We could compute an over-approximation to the convex hull. And usually that's sufficient. We don't have to be exact while computing the transfer function. We could compute an over-approximation to the transfer function if the exact transfer function is hard to compute, and so on and so forth. So keeping that in mind, let me now move on to approximations to the polyhedral domain. The first class of abstractions, approximations, are the so-called weakly relational domains. Now, these are domains where efficiency is gained by restricting the shape of the polyhedron to be one from a pre-specified form. And by that I mean, take for example the octagon domain due to Antoine Minet. In the octagon domain, each constraint is restricted to have two variables, at most two variables. And furthermore, each coefficient of the variable can either be plus one, minus one. So it's basically two variables per inequality with unit coefficients. And you furthermore need to have all the variables in your system, all possible pairs of variables, and you need constraints involving them. So that's the octagon domain. The octahedron domain, on the other hand, drops some of the restrictions of the octagon domain, and it says you can drop the restriction that then there has to be at most two variables per constraint. You can have more than two variables per constraint, but each coefficient still has to be a unit coefficient. Recently, we generalized this octagons and octahedra to give you a domain where the user decides on the expressions on the left-hand side. So the user could give us expressions like 2x minus 3y, whatever the user feels should be on the left-hand side. And the analysis is parameterized on the constant right-hand sides. The goal of the analysis is to discover a right-hand side that makes the whole expression invariant. So the advantage of weakly relational domains, in some sense, they are all polynomial time on the program size and on the domain size. The disadvantage is that it's frequently the case that you need a complicated expression like 2x plus 3y plus z less than 9 to prove an invariant, but the expression is simply not in your domain, which means you are not quote-unquote tracking the expression. An ideal situation would be a tractable analysis that runs very fast in polynomial time, but the necessary expressions are discovered during the course of the analysis and not provided by the user in some sense, or not restricted a priori in some way. So there have been so-called strongly relational domains, which are as opposed to weakly relational domains. In these domains, the user does not specify much. The user does not specify, for instance, the left-hand sides of the inequalities, but the user just lets the analysis discover the invariance by itself. One such example is the two variables per inequality domain, which removes the constraint that the octagon's coefficient be plus minus one. So each inequality in this domain involves two variables, but the coefficients could be arbitrary. Now, in this type of an analysis, if the analysis discovers 2x plus 3y less than 5, then that expression has been discovered by the analysis during the course of the analysis and not been provided by the user per se. There have been other approaches which have depended on approximating the domain operations, which means instead of computing the exact convex hull, you compute an over-approximate convex hull. And instead of computing an exact post condition, you compute an over-approximate post condition, and so on. So these include domains that use Cartesian factored polyhedra, and our recent contribution where we came up with notions of joints and post-condition operations, which are relaxed in the sense they are approximate, and they can be as relaxed as you want it to be in the limit approaching the exact convex hull. So I shall talk about the design of the join operation for the rest of this talk. So let me talk about the join operation. A quick definition of the join operation. We are given two input polyhedra, S1 and S2. It could be N, but I'm restricting myself to two. The output is a polyhedron S such that S contains both S1 and S2. As I mentioned earlier, the convex hull is the smallest containing polyhedron, and it's the best join. It's the join that's the best approximation to the disjunction of the two polyhedron that you can find as a single polyhedron. However, convex hull is intractable for large problems. So our goal is over approximations to the convex hull. So let me introduce to you a join operation that I shall call the weak join. So the idea behind weak join is, given two polyhedra S1 and S2, we shall consider the constraints in each polyhedra in turn. So if you consider this constraint that has been shaded dark in S1, the idea is to move the linear inequality along a parallel axis so that the inequality now subsumes both S1 and S2. So if you could do that moving of the inequality along the parallel axis to subsume both S1 and S2, then you have taken care of that particular inequality. Now, go along with each inequality that appears in the syntactic form of S1 and in the syntactic form of S2, and you have a join. So we just take each half space or each linear inequality and just shift it parallelly so that it contains other polyhedron. So that is one example of a join operation. Now, the question is, how do you find out how much to shift it parallelly, and what is this repositioning that I've been talking about so far? And the idea is you take a half space, E greater than or equal to question mark that I've shown here, and shifting the half space along a parallel family of half spaces is nothing but changing the constant coefficient of the half space. So if E greater than or equal to 1 and E greater than or equal to 2 and E greater than or equal to 3 are all parallel families of half spaces. So we need to find that particular value for that red question mark for which that half space that I've shown there fits snugly along the polyhedron P without intersecting it, but it has to be as close to P as possible. So let's state it another way. Find a constant C such that E greater than or equal to C subsumes P. So this is a well-known, well-studied problem, and it's simply linear programming. In this, I set up an optimization problem which says minimize a linear expression E subject to the constraint P. And so P is a polyhedral constraint, E is a linear expression, that's the objective, and the outcomes are either the optimal solution C exists, the polyhedron is empty, or E is unbounded in P, in which case you cannot find a repositioning, so you just drop the constraint. Linear programming, you could either use simplex and not deal with floating point issues, or you could use interior point techniques, as was mentioned in the previous talk, and the floating point issues will come to bite you. So let me summarize the idea behind weak join. We reposition the constraints, which means we change the constant coefficient, and this is achieved using linear programming. The drawback, however, is that no new relations are discovered. So if I had constraint sets S1 and S2 on the two polyhedron, any constraint that appears on the output already appeared on some of the input. It just had a constant coefficient change. So that's not too interesting. If you had X less than Y and if you had Z less than Y, then you'll only have those constraints. You're not going to learn anything new in this process. So the question is, how do we strengthen weak join to get a join that we could use as a strongly relational domain? So here's the idea. I take two rectangles and I compute their weak join. And the weak join is nothing but the smallest enclosing rectangle, because the only constraints I have are axis parallel. On the other hand, the convex hull discovers these missing constraints. So the idea is to get from a weak join to the convex hull. We are going to get to some of these missing constraints, but not all of them. We'll just get to as many of them as our restrictions of complexity permit. So the question is, how do we get to some of these missing relations? One simple idea is that of inversion join, where you take a pair of half spaces, take one pair from here, take another pair from there, and you just find out the half space that connects these two points A and B. These are not going to be points in higher dimensions, but you just find out the hyperplane that joins these two pairs of half spaces. And under some conditions, which I can state by means of simple linear algebra, AB can form a missing relation. It does not form under all conditions, but it forms under some conditions. And you could do that for all pairs of half spaces, and you could get all these relations, extra relations that you could add, and you could improve your weak join using these relations. So you might wonder, you know, what are exactly the conditions, what do they look like? So pictorially, here's what an inversion means. It means that somehow that there is a half space here that subsumes an half space here, but there's a half space on P2 that subsumes a half space on P1. Excuse me. Need to use this. It means that this half space here has subsumed this half space here. So the half space in P2 subsumes the half space in P1, but this half space in P1 subsumes this half space in P2. So an implementation of the inversion join simply consists of taking these two polyhedra and looking for these half space relations among these polyhedra. So combining join operators, when you are doing an analysis, you could either choose to go with a single join operator, or you could choose to combine join operators. And join operators can be combined based on the sizes of the input polyhedron. For instance, if the input polyhedron size is less than, say, some number 40, we could do a convex hull. If it's more than that number, which you think cannot be reliably handled by an existing convex hull computation, you could go for a weaker notion of join, like inversion join. You could also do a join based on which analysis phase you are in. If you are in the mood for dropping constraints by doing widening, then you could do a weaker join because you're going to drop constraints anyway, and so on and so forth. So let me now move on to applications. So the primary application that I shall focus on involves our tool, internal tool that we are developing inside NEC Labs, which is called FSoft. FSoft takes a C program, and through a series of program transformations, it converts it to a Boolean model, which is model-checked using a tool called Diver. So the key transformation steps inside FSoft are slicing, modeling of memory, pointer analysis, generating monitors for the properties that we are interested in checking, range analysis, constant folding. All of these simplify the model to an extent, and then we build a Boolean model and model check it. Our contribution to FSoft was to insert a linear invariant generation module here in order to simplify the model further and remove some of the checks that the model was performing automatically using static analysis, if possible. So the goal was to do, as I mentioned earlier, is to do a polyhedral analysis to prove the infeasibility of error conditions. And in our case, the error conditions are generated at each buffer access. So each buffer access corresponds to an error condition, which is shown in red. And our goal was to use polyhedra to prove that the error condition was unreachable. So the features of the analyzer was it was completely lightweight. All sorts of abstractions were employed to make sure that we don't run out of time or space. We performed an intra-procedural analysis, which is completely context insensitive. So there is no modeling of function calls or any sort of context. And the analyzer performed pre-processing, such as linearizing the model, converting all the nonlinear expressions into linear expressions, and performing partitioning, where we partition variables into small related clusters. This is required so that we don't want to compute invariants involving a large number of variables. And what frequently happens is if you have an invariant involving 20 variables and you drop it during the widening phase, you lose a lot more than if you had an invariant involving 5 variables that you dropped during the widening phase. So it really matters that you compute invariants on smaller number of variables, but 2 obviously is not enough. So we performed our analysis on a few code benchmarks that we borrowed from industrial code development groups. And the idea is to show that this kind of analysis can run fast. So the largest program that we have analyzed currently is just 15,000 lines of code, and it runs in under 2 minutes, a little over 2 minutes, I'm sorry. And the performance is pretty competitive with, for example, say, octagon analysis. Even though it's a much stronger domain than octagons. As far as the number of proofs go, it really varies, but it's consistently around the 40% to 50% mark. So even though we don't handle too many proofs, and it's never intended to prove all the array overflow properties, this shows that a very lightweight analysis can quickly get rid of a lot of the proofs that occur in code without having to go through heavier model checking based approaches.
Excuse me. What exactly do you count in the column for
proofs? This one? So this is the number I managed to prove, and these are all array overflow accesses. So each access gets written into a condition, which gets written into an error block for which I need to prove unreachability. So in this case, read this as 44 conditions, 18 of which we managed to prove using polyhedra.
And what happens with the others?
The others go on to the model checker. So this is just a phase that we introduced between the model checker and so the others go on to the model checker where they get proved anyway. But you know, this is a much faster way of proving things than just sending them to model checker. So our future work, we are planning to consider alternative polyhedral representations. So far I've presented to you constraint-based and generator-based representation. On the other hand, there are other representations which are in between constraints and generators, and you can obtain these using Farkas lemma. So the question is to investigate these alternative polyhedral representations. We also wish to study improved linearization techniques. Even though much of the talk has focused on doing polyhedral analysis, linearization is a really key aspect. It's what controls how fast your analysis runs and how many error blocks you're able to prove. And studying linearization techniques, we believe, is a good research direction to go in. We are interested in path-sensitive analysis techniques. So we are interested in giving the analysis more time if it can prove more error blocks without running out of space or without running out of too much time. And we wish to explore combinations of constraint-based and widening-based techniques in practice. There must be some way of replacing widening with some kind of a constraint solving so that you can do better than the standard widening that's out there. So that's something that we are interested in exploring. Details of this can be found in our VMCHI 2006 paper and in my PhD thesis, which appeared 6 months ago. Before I leave you, I'd like to acknowledge the contributions of my colleagues at NEC, my advisor Zohar Manna, co-advisor Hini Sipma, Michael Colon, and Aaron, who have been my co-authors in most of this work. Thank you very much, and now I shall take any questions.